Hello and welcome to the True Blue LA podcast opening day edition. It's here, Eric.
We didn't have a special emergency podcast. The Dodgers didn't surprise us with a trade. I mean, they still technically could.
No, they only do it after we record a full podcast. So they've we're recording this on Wednesday. Yeah. They have an off day tomorrow. Plenty of time.
Yeah, there's plenty of time. I will say this. We'll talk about it later. If there is like either a trade, a signing, or like a Trey Turner extension, we will record an extra podcast for that. But other than that, that's it. But we have a lot to talk about still, even without any other breaking news.
Yeah, roster is getting more or less set. We'll talk about that, see where we were right, where we were wrong. We have just in general some minor signings to talk about, and just general excitement over opening day and what we think the season ahead looks like. Then we have Dodgers Rewind. We have questions from Craig. All of that after this.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
A week later than originally scheduled, but opening day is here.
Yeah. It's weird. So opening day for like Major League Baseball is Thursday. Mm-hmm. Originally, there were 9 games Thursday, and so 18 teams, 18 of 30. And then the rest start on Friday. Some of those teams also play Friday, but at least 2 of the Thursday games have been rained out ahead of time. Yankees, Red Sox, and then whoever the Twins are playing. So yeah, it's going to be weird, but yeah. So now Friday is the heavier opening day of the two now. So it's going to be interesting, but yeah, the Dodgers play Friday afternoon, Coors Field. We know Walker Buehler starting that game. After that, we don't know the rest of the order just yet. The Dodgers have been like super like cagey about it.
It's a weird thing to be cagey about.
Right. It seems like, I don't want to say it has to be Clayton Kershaw and Julio Urias in some order. For the most part, like they've been like Kershaw, especially that was a concern. Like he's been healthy. Right. Urias has not really been super effective, but he's also only had, that's the thing about this, this is why it's going to be so weird and maybe why they're being cagey. Everyone either had three, in the case of like Urias and Tony Gonsolin, or four like spring outings, and like that's like middle to late spring. So these first 2 weeks are going to be weird is what I'm saying. So maybe that's why they're being super weird. And it's certainly why, and also because Coors Field, the Dodgers are spooked enough to the point where they're going to carry 16 pitchers on the 28-man roster, at least for the weekend. There's been some like intimations that they might go to like a fourth bench player after that, because they can figure out a way to get by on just 15 pitchers. So, but it's going to be weird. Like, there's going to be a lot of like, yeah, there could be piggybacking. There could be like starters only going four, like if they're good, you know what I mean? Like, and they just might be ineffective too, like, and get the hook early. It's just going to be super weird. But yeah, like, I don't know, like, it's not a normal year, but we haven't really had a normal year in like 3 years, so who knows.
How's the rest of the roster kind of shape up now? I don't think we don't have a final 26 yet, or 28, right. Excuse me, but we have a pretty good idea.
Yeah, it's almost finalized, but nothing official yet. So there's 32 players left in camp. I mean, technically there's not really a camp anymore because they're not in Arizona. They are, I think they're doing a workout.
A tent, Dodger Stadium, call it a camp. It'll be fine.
They do a, yeah, there's a, they're there's glamping. Oh man, glamping sounds good. There's 32 players in camp. Three of those, though, are pitchers who are going to start on the injured list. Phil Bickford, probably the, like, would be the first one back, maybe. Or it might just be a choice thing regarding him or Caleb Ferguson, who's pitched quite a bit during spring training, but I think they just want to be cautious with him coming off Tommy John. And then Tommy Canley, who finally got into a game last night on Tuesday, actually looked really good, but he's going to spend like the bulk of his April, I think, sort of in rehab mode. So like in a few weeks, or like 3 weeks or something, we might see him. But those three guys on the injury list, so you're basically down to 29 players for 28 spots. There's only 12 position players in that group, and those are the 12 to start. So it's just figuring out which pitcher gets sent down. Now, I was asking about this the other night, because of Coors Field and the sort of pathological need for like as many long men as possible. Like Tyler Anderson's not in the rotation, but he's like been fairly built up. He could probably easily go 4 or 5 innings if he had to. Even in relief. They also want to carry Mitch White in that role. Again, not official, but I literally asked Dave about like Mitch White, cause he hadn't pitched like in a spring game. And he said, no, he's been backfields. He's ready to go. He understands his role as a long man. And then I said, well, does that mean he's more likely to be on the roster, like for the series at Coors Field? And Dave Roberts smiled, did not answer, but he said, very much so, basically. Like it's the yes without saying yes for sure. So he'll be there now. And then basically it's like which lefty goes down, which goes back to, we'll talk about this in a second, but it's, if I had to guess, it's probably Garrett Clevenger based on how people have been used. It may be between Clevenger and like Justin Brule, who coincidentally were, conflicting left-handers on our opening day rosters two podcasts ago now, but last week. Now, how they sort of got to this point on the roster is on, on Monday or Sunday, they sent Jake Lamb down, and then on Monday they sent the other 8 non-roster invitees down. So none of those guys made the team. So that sort of made it very simple and in terms of like what they have to do to finalize the roster. And it also, I had Kevin Pillar on my roster like before the Dodgers traded AJ Pollock. And then after they traded, I thought for sure. And he's not going to be there just yet. However, it seems like just the way they've been talking about Lamb and Pillar is that they're almost definitely going to be with the Dodgers at some point, you know? Now, after our starting May 2nd, they go back to 26-man rosters, which comes with a 13-pitcher limit. So you're going to have at least 13 position players at that point. So you're definitely going to see an extra position player by then. Now, whether that happens to be Pillar or Lamb, and like I said, once they get out of Coors Field, they also have an off day Monday. So they might just send a pitcher down then and call up one of those guys, you know, now. So who knows? But like, I think it's reasonable. But for in terms of opening day roster, I had Kevin Pillar on. You had Gavin Lux on. We did change it though to after the trade issue. But our other thing was having Clevinger. I had Clevinger. You had
Brule,
and so I'm probably going to be wrong on that. Ooh. I actually don't remember because I didn't go back. I don't remember what we changed it to after on the trade podcast. Because my brain is mush right now, and I don't remember stuff from more than 3 seconds ago. So that's where I'm at. But you're going to clearly come out ahead in that, I believe. So, yeah, like this, the first week there, Coors Field, off day Monday. I'll be at jury duty, which in theory could extend a little bit, but hopefully it will be done by the time they're home later in the week. But and then they have two games in Minnesota. There, it's a night game, and then followed by a day game on getaway day. So that'll be interesting. Our Michael Elizondo, a writer on the site, who went to like a bunch of different Dodger road games like across the country last year, he's going to be going to those two games in Minnesota. So I labeled him in our notes here as future podcast guest. That will certainly happen at some point. He's going to tell us about his travels. And he's written a lot of interesting stuff on the site, so you should definitely check that out.
As I mentioned before, we're recording this on Wednesday. The Dodgers do not play today. They don't play tomorrow. So let's put a bow on spring training, shorten spring training. Any news that came from it? Any sort of lingering thoughts you had as we close the books on it?
Just some scattershot stuff. Chris Taylor, so he's recovering from elbow surgery, and it seems to bother him, if at all, more in the field than when hitting. And it's from what Dave Roberts was saying, he's going to basically like stay in left field for a while rather than go all around like he usually does, because they don't like the sidearm throws for his elbow right now, like from the infield. You know, not that every throw is a sidearm throw, but they don't want to mess with his like arm angles, and that they're more comfortable with him in the outfield. So I think he's going to be sticking in left a little bit, and I would imagine the occasional like center or something. But that opens up like second base a little bit for Gavin Lux. Not that he's going to be every day. Gavin Lux will also see some time in left field, but it's not going to be like, at least in the early going, it's not going to move around a lot with Taylor like kind of confined to the outfield for at least a few weeks or something. Cody Bellinger, he and Fernando Tatis are among the couple, like a quartet of MLB sort of stars in a new, like they're going to do like a Dairy Queen. I don't know. I'm sure it's going to be like a video commercial, but I think there's going to be some just general advertising with them. Bellinger and Tatis, like they put out a picture of them together, like with the Dairy Queen Blizzard, which is now the official treat of Major League Baseball. I forgot what the burger at Dairy Queen Salt or the specific one involved, but that's also going to be the official burger of Major League Baseball, which is very weird. I sort of, in a perverse way, I love that. I love the official anything of anything, like where it's the more ridiculous, the better, you know. But yeah, Bellinger, like, especially based on the replies to when I tweeted that, a lot of people are like, well, he's going to be in AAA by the time the commercial comes out, you know, all this stuff, because he hasn't really been hitting. And it is kind of funny, like, there was a lot of talk about his strikeouts during spring training, which were voluminous, like over half of his at-bats. But it's funny now. It's like, oh, he just flied out. Like, he didn't strike out. Cool. Like, it's like it's almost like watching Little League at this point, like in terms of like the – you're like a parent in the stands, like basically going – oh, that's so nice. Like, he didn't strike out. Good for him. You know, that kind of a thing. So it's kind of weird. The last spring training game, Bobby Miller, he's the Dodgers' top pitching prospect. He's going to start in Double-A Tulsa. But he pitched for 3 innings at Dodger Stadium. It's the first time he's pitched in a game at Dodger Stadium. Right away, first batter, Shohei Ohtani, no pressure, kid, struck him out. He averaged 99 over 99 miles an hour on his fastball. His stuff looked electric. It was awesome. And and then like it was a kind of a funny broadcast, because they had they would never do this in a regular season game, but they had Dino Ebel mic'd up, which they've done like the last few years, like in spring training. And Dino Ebel is awesome, and he third base coach, and he's just very like interactive and stuff. And so they had a couple cool things where he was like he waved Freddie Freeman home, like as they're like talking about what his role is in this thing. And then the perfect play happened. It was like a double to the gap, so he got to like basically show exactly what he was talking about. It was great. But like right when they started with Dino Ebel, it was right after the first inning, and Ebel's like, ooh, that was some gas, huh? Like, just talking about Miller, it's pretty funny. And he's, like, been in baseball forever. So it's like anytime those guys get excited, you know it's something cool. The Dodgers signed Dellin Betances to a minor league deal. So don't know what his situation is. Like, he had shoulder surgery in July, so not sure where he's at, like, in that recovery. But, you know, when he was healthy, it's been a while since he's been fully healthy, but one of the most like dominant relievers like in baseball for like 5 years with the Yankees, but I think he's pitched 17 total games in the last 3 seasons, basically on a myriad of injuries. So yeah, it's been a little bit of a thing. So who knows? But he's just thrown onto the pile of hurt pitchers now who could help at some point in the season, you know. And they're trying to get as many of those guys as possible and see what sticks. I mentioned Trey Turner. If the Dodgers happen to sign him, Mookie Betts style from 2 years ago, like right before opening day. Jack Harris of the Los Angeles Times sort of caught up with Turner the other day and wrote about it. But yet there hasn't really been an update in talks there. So it doesn't seem like something's going to happen, and he's just probably going to end up going to free agency. But you never know. Like, it could be a last minute thing, but that it doesn't sound like that's going to happen. So yeah, that's kind of where we're at. You know, it's going to be weird the first 2 weeks of the season. That said, I'm ready to actually watch games that count now, because the Dodgers rudely didn't tie for like the last like over a week at the end of spring training. It was just awful.
The first 2 games against the Angels, I'll be nice. It didn't look so good. They were blowouts
Urias struggled, Gonsolin struggled. Who pitched the first game?
Bueller.
Oh yeah, he gave up 3 home runs. So yeah, it's they haven't looked the best. Like, I mean, you're not going into the season going, is this team going to have an under 500 record? But like, you know, it's not that. But it's like, yeah, they're not the sharpest right now. But maybe they're just waiting for the light switch of opening day. But speaking of opening day, the Dodgers do play the Rockies on Friday, Friday afternoon. Coors
Breaking
Field
news.
1. Wait, what? 1:10 p.m. Pacific. Before this year, how many times did the Dodgers play opening day against the Rockies? And my hint to you, not much of a hint, but it's the Rockies' first year was 1993.
I will throw a number out after this.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
How many times have the Dodgers opened against the Rockies before? So we're not counting this year.
Yeah, before this year.
Okay. Let's go with four.
So before I give you the actual answer, I will say...
Which is four.
No, the Dodgers have never beaten the Rockies on opening day.
Okay.
And mostly that is because they only played them last year on opening day. So they've never hosted the Rockies on opening day. Yeah, last year was the first time. I'm certain I looked that up at some point last year for opening day. And when I looked it up today, I was surprised. So that's why I asked. So, yeah, that's where we're at.
I was on the lower end. It was the goofy game, right?
We should have known something is going to be up with Cody Bellinger based on him hitting the first home run of the season and then getting a single because he passed Justin Turner on the bases. So, yeah, one of those years.
Well, time for Dodgers Rewind.
It is, and I hate that this is the case, but it's another Dodger who passed away recently, but at the same time, it's also good to look back on some of these guys. So, and I was actually a little surprised that we hadn't talked about him before, but on Sunday in Phoenix, Tommy Davis passed away. He was 83. So he was, there's a couple like good stories with him. He was a high school star as much as a high schooler can be a star. In New York, and the Dodgers were still in Brooklyn. This was 1956, was his senior year. He was pretty much set to sign with the Yankees. And then I guess this would have been Buzzy Bavasi at the time. He got Jackie Robinson, who was entering, or it was in his final season with the Dodgers. He got Jackie Robinson to call Tommy Davis's house, knowing that Tommy Davis's mom was a huge Brooklyn Dodgers fan. And this is from an interview in 2019 with Tommy Davis. He said, "My mother wondered who was calling. I pointed to the receiver and mouthed the words, 'It's Jackie Robinson.' And I couldn't believe I was speaking to one of my heroes, although I don't remember doing much talking." So shortly after that, the Dodgers signed Tommy Davis for $4,000. And from what I can gather, I think the Sabre bio mentioned this. I'll link that in the notes. But $4,000 was the highest bonus you can give someone without having to put them on the roster right away, which is sort of like the bonus baby rule, like what Sandy Koufax like basically had to like sort of camp on the roster for a little bit and earlier than he was sort of ready. But so they got to put him in the minors, and while he was in the minors, he won a batting title at age 18, and then he won a batting title at age 20. The latter was in AAA Spokane, and he comes up to the Dodgers in 1959 by their first year in LA. He didn't really play that much that year, but they did win the World Series. He didn't play in the World Series. He was, you know, still just a rookie. He was a major leaguer for good in 1960. They sort of moved him around a little bit. He was not the best defensively, basically, but he could hit. And so they had him like in the outfield at different spots and then at third base mostly. But then in 1962, they kind of settled in on left field for the most part. He played a little bit in other spots, but left field was mostly his. And that year was weird. So it was the first season of Dodger Stadium. And anytime you hear about the Dodgers, or like Dodger Stadium generally, but also like 1960s Dodger Stadium, it's like the most, it's the picturesque pitcher's park that's ever pitcher park, you know, basically. And it was still like, it was an extreme pitcher's park. Like the park factor, I believe, on Baseball Reference was 92 that first year, which is, you know, pretty a heavy pitcher's park. That said, it was also an expansion year. So it was the first year for the Mets and the Astros. So as is usually the case with expansion, that means pretty much across the league, a lot on those teams, but like just generally there's a lot of pitchers who might not be major league ready, like in the majors, or like, you know, some probably are major league ready, but the pitching is just a little worse in expansion years generally. So offense was up, but also the Dodgers just generally were a good offensive team. They scored 842 runs. The Dodgers have only passed that once since then. That was 3 years ago in 2019. And like, to give you an idea, so they finished second in the National League in runs that year. In the first 56 years of Dodger Stadium, the Dodgers only finished in the top two in the National League in runs scored five times. So they've actually led the National League the last 4 years, which is wild. Like, but just given the history of like the stadium, but this is, we're going to look back on this like era, this current era of like Dodgers, the Dodgers, and like be like, wow, that was, it was pretty epic, but we'll see. But back to Tommy Davis. So 62, he was like a main reason why. He was 23. He hit 27 home runs, which was a career high. He hit 346. He won the batting title. He mostly batted third that year. You had Maury Wills, who won the league MVP that season, in probably his best season, hitting leadoff. He also stole 104 bases, which was a record. Then you had Jim Gilliam, who was very, very good, hitting second, who walked 93 times and had a 370 on base. So Davis was basically always hitting with people on base, and he like killed it with people on base. And he drove in 153 runs that year. No one in the majors got to that number of RBIs until 1998. So, yeah, it was a crazy good year. That set the franchise record for RBIs. I will get to his hits total in our trivia question a little bit later.
Why don't you tell me more about it?
Yeah, so I'll get to it in a second. But so he had 200. No,
I wanted a hint.
No, my hint is that so he was teammates with Willie Davis, but this is not Willie Davis. This is Tommy Davis. He had 230 hits. That's my hint. And then the next year, he won another batting title at 326. So now, this is, again, we're honoring Tommy Davis here, so I don't want to do my usual rant, but I will note that technically he was the only Dodger to win a batting title, doing so twice, until Trey Turner this last year. And Trey Turner only spent like the last 2 months of the year with the Dodgers. But as we all know, Eddie Murray in 1990 led the majors in batting average and did not win a batting title because Willie McGee is evil. Tommy Davis, had a good year, reasonably good year in 1964. Nothing really special, though. He didn't win a batting title, so his streak was snapped. But in 65, the third week of the season, he was trying to slide into second. And the different accounts of it were like he wasn't sure whether to like pull up or slide, which is never a good spot. And then he ended up some of the descriptions said he snapped his ankle, which is never good, but he basically broke and dislocated his right ankle, and he was out for the year. So he did actually pinch hit in the final game of the season, but he was not ready, and so play in the World Series that year. So he was kind of in, but that set the stage for the guy who took over for him in left field was a 30-year-old sort of journeyman, Lou Johnson, who passed away a couple years ago. And Lou Johnson hit the game-winning home run in Game 7. So sort of his legend was born there, too. But also it's not Willie Davis, it's Tommy Davis. Willie Davis was also very good. But Tommy Davis, so that ankle injury was like a turning point. I was looking up from 62 to 65, which was like his first four full seasons. He had a 129 WRC plus you know, obviously very good hitter, could sort of fit anywhere. But then, like, the rest of his career, the last 11 years of his career after the ankle injury, he had a 101 WRC plus, which is still, you know, right at like league average, but he was also a little bit, you know, not the best defensively. He got, sort of an advantage a little bit in 1973 with the designated hitter coming in. He was the Orioles, like, sort of main DH for a couple years, and he played until like 1976. There's a decent argument that had the DH not come in, his career might have been over like a couple years earlier. Ken Singleton, who was an excellent player for a lot of teams, including the Orioles, he tweeted out on Monday, when I was traded to Baltimore, Tommy helped welcome me to the ball club. He gave me his personal scouting reports on opposing pitchers. Solid teammate and excellent hitter. You know, Tommy Davis was pretty much like well liked by just about everyone. He was around the Dodger Stadium a lot. Like in recent years, he was in the Dodgers community relations department. He was a hitting coach very briefly, 1 year with the Mariners in 1981. He was on Maury Wills' staff, but that was also Maury Wills got fired midway or like pretty early in that season. So Davis only lasted, I think, 1 year in that position. But he had, you know, pretty amazing baseball life. The only LA Dodger to win a batting title by playing a full season with the Dodgers, and he did it twice. But he was an excellent hitter, and he passed away. He was 83.
All right. Now about that hit total.
Yeah. So 230 hits. That's the LA Dodgers record, 1962. But he's second all-time in a single season in Dodgers history behind one Brooklyn Dodger. Who is that Brooklyn Dodger?
Zach Wheat.
See, that's a good strategy, just generally. but no. I'll give you one more guess if you want to throw something out.
Duke Snider.
No, I think he walked more. And of course, my baseball reference isn't loading the right person, but I'm fairly certain it was Babe Herman in 1930, which was a crazy good offensive era or offensive time. He had 241 hits, and I will confirm that as soon as his page loads, but right now it's not loading. So, yeah. But yeah, Babe Herman has the Brooklyn or the overall Dodgers record, but Tommy Davis is still second there, so pretty impressive.
Well, a little spoiler before we play the song, but I'll let you know we're not done with Tommy Davis trivia. It's going to be it's going to be your turn because it's time for
Questions for Craig. We love them.
Hi, Eric and Jacob.
We love it. Oh, sorry.
This is a message.
I'm always off on that. Yep.
Jacob, first, happy pre-birthday to you. Thank you.
Yay.
Hope you have a great weekend with the family. Second, you must be considered a lucky charm in Kansas City sports, a World Series, Super Bowl, and another in NCAA basketball title. Real quick before I continue this message, I'm actually the Jinx. I was at out on Massachusetts Street. Watching the game until halftime, and then I went back to my office, took my Kings shirt off, and then they started the epic comeback. I did go back out for the last 10 or so minutes, maybe more.
When they almost gave it away.
No, there was I left with a 5-point lead. I got there, they were tied, and I decided if they went down by more than three, I would go back. but at least if I'm recalling correctly, never happened. I think they only went down by one at a point.
Amazing.
So anyways, now, do we have a locked and loaded roster through the Dodgers still have a few more days before their first game? With that, here's this week's questions. In honor of the late Tommy Davis, this week's trivia questions will be related to this Dodger great, and in particular, his inaugural 1962 Dodger Stadium season. In that opening year, Tommy Davis had a 954 OPS and 352 plate appearances at Chavez Ravine. That feat has been done 10 more times in the last 60 seasons, I'm assuming. Can Eric name these Dodgers who especially loved home cooking? Only one player did it twice, so you're looking for 9 players.
Okay, before I answer, I just want to update. It was Babe Herman, 241 hits, 1930. He hit 393 that year, which reminded me of another Tommy Davis note. When he hit 346, no Dodger had a batting average that high until Mike Piazza went 362 in 97. So,
okay.
Yeah, so that was me stalling. So 950 OPS at Dodger Stadium in at least 300 plate appearances. So let's go with Cody Bellinger.
Yes.
Adrian Beltre.
Yes.
Gary Sheffield.
No.
Oh, wow. Okay, Pedro Guerrero.
No.
You're a liar. Matt Kemp.
No.
What?
Sorry.
How did he not get all right, I'm mad now. I am very mad. Steve Garvey.
No.
Reggie Smith.
No.
You know what, then just tell me, because this is obviously stupid.
I'm having fun, this is great. All right, I'll go in order. You want any more names? Big, you know.
No. OPS. I'm too angry.
Mike Piazza.
I'm looking at Matt Kemp stuff.
Matt Kemp is on this list. I apologize. Matt Kemp is on this list. It's a big list. I misread. So you're good. You want Mike Piazza?
I should have just said him earlier. But yeah.
With 1066, Cody Bellinger, as you said, 1052, Andre Ethier, 1013.
That was 2009.
Yes. Adrian Beltre, 982. Matt Kemp, apologies, 981. Ron Say, 974. Eddie Murray.
1977? Oh, yeah.
Eddie Murray, 1968.
That hurts.
Rafael Furcal, 955. Yeah. Sean Green, 954.
Furcal, wow.
Tommy Davis, 954. And Mike Piazza, again, 953.
Wow. See, Furcal was a surprise. The other ones I would have got had I not been just angry answering.
And that same season, Tommy Davis set a Dodger franchise season record with 153 RBI. Davis had 73 RBI at Dodger Stadium that season, which is all-time Dodger Stadium season record. 10 other times there has been a Dodger with 61 or more RBI at Dodger Stadium.
Mm.
Two Dodgers did it twice. You're looking for 8 names.
Okay, so there's only been like a handful of guys with like 120 total. So we'll go again. Cody Bellinger, Matt Kemp.
Yes. Hold on. I lost my leg. Matt Kemp is there. I double checked for you.
Yeah. And then, wow. Let's go Sean Green.
No. I'm cagey now. I'm double checking.
What about Adrian Beltre?
Yes, 61 in 2004.
Wow. Okay, then let's see. Piazza.
Piazza did it twice, 97 and 93.
Garvey.
Did it twice, 79 and 78. Missing 3 names.
Ethier?
Ethier in 2009.
Okay. Then it gets weird. He didn't really have...
I'll give you seasons let's go back. If you want it.
Let me go first. I will say Ron Say.
Nope.
Okay. Yeah, give me seasons. I'll probably get
62
it.
62 and 74.
Okay, 62 was probably Frank Howard.
You are correct.
And what was the other one?
74.
Jim Wynn?
There you go. Well done. Another record Tommy Davis set that year, most hits by a player at Dodger Stadium. Hey, look at that. Davis had 114 hits, which still leads all Dodgers after all this time. Again, 10 other times there has been a Dodger with 100 or more hits at Dodger Stadium in one season. Your hints are one Dodger dominates this category and it has been done three times since the 2000s.
Okay, so Garvey has to be the one that dominates.
Correct.
Because he had all those 200 hit seasons.
One, two, three, four times. Or five times, I think.
Okay, so then 100 hits. So here's the deal. So Piazza had the 1 year where he hit, I think, 200 hits exactly. But I'm gonna go with Piazza just to guess. I don't think so, but let's see.
He is not on the list. Your gut was correct.
Yeah. So 200 hits is what I'm trying to picture. And okay, what about Steve Sachs?
No.
Maury Wills?
Maury Wills with 109 in 1962.
Okay.
You have four names left.
Willie Davis?
Nope.
What about Willie Davis? No. let's. Wow, this is rough. The hits thing. Let's just go to the well again. What about Ethier? Is 2009? Let's see if that shows up. No. Okay. What about Matt Kemp?
Nope.
You don't have to keep lying.
I did that one time, so maybe.
Yeah. This is difficult.
Your seasons are 1993, 2006, 2007, and 2016.
Okay, so if it's 06, I'm going to go for call.
Correct.
So the other one was 93, 16, and what?
2007.
Is 2016 Puig?
It is not.
Oh, 2016 Seager.
Yes.
So 93. Wow. He didn't hit enough. Brett Butler.
There you go.
And then 2007 is the other one?
Yes.
Okay, now. Juan Pierre.
There you go.
Nice.
Well done. For the last trivia question, a record that Davis does not hold, highest season batting average, minimum 300 plate appearances, at Dodger Stadium. Davis hit .352 in 352 plate appearances in 1962. That is second to one player. Only four players, including Davis, have hit .343 or better in a season at Dodger Stadium with a minimum plate appearance of 300. Who are they?
So I think the top guy is Piazza.
Correct.
And then, so I have to go three more?
Correct.
Let's go back to the Ethier well.
Nope.
What about Matt Kemp's year, 2011?
No.
I don't remember what Adrian Beltre hit in 2004, but I'm going to say him.
Say that again. Apologies.
Beltre?
Nope.
Pedro Guerrero. What about him?
Nope. I'll give you seasons. 93.
Damn.
Yeah.
90. Ah. 90s Murray.
Yep.
then 93 Butler.
Yep. That 347 Murray at 343. Just below that, Garvey with 338 and 333, and then for call with 333.
Nice.
There you go. First non-trivia question, if I can find it. For the contest, let's name the AL postseason six, the division wild card winners. Tiebreaker, name the team with the most wins and pick that number.
So we expressly remember last week. I forget how he worded the question, but it was basically he wanted like the result of every major league game or something like that. And now he witnessed us trying to get around it, and he came back with, "What if you give us the rest of the league?" Okay, so we're not. This is not a complaint, Craig. It is a complaint, but it's just more of us whining. Okay, so AL. I guess I'll start. Let's go division winners first. Let's go. I guess. Yeah, it's got to be. So Houston and the White Sox. And then so the AL East is wild. So I don't know if you saw this earlier today, but the Fangraphs, current projections in the AL East have the four non-Orioles teams all finishing at 88-74, which is hilarious. So I am gonna jump on the bandwagon and say the Blue Jays as my division winner, but it's tough. But yeah, what do you got?
I will go with, I'm trying to think of when to get a little spicy. I'll go Astros, White Sox. So not there. I'll say the Rays win the East.
Yeah, I mean they're so deep, like it's pretty crazy.
And then I will say that the Blue Jays, the Twins, and the Yankees are the wild card teams.
And Twins. Okay. So I will also say the Rays because I think they're really good. Let's go. Let's go with. Let's go with the Yankees because you know it's going to be a three team thing, I think. Three teams from that division go. And then so that means the other I'm going to jump on just so I can be disappointed, and I will say the Mariners.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. You good to go?
Yeah.
Kansas City's Bobby Witt Jr. and Seattle's Julio Rodriguez are two of the top prospects scheduled to be on their opening day rosters in a few days. Eric, we know that one of the new wrinkles in the CBA is the draft pick compensation if a top prospect plays enough games and finishes high in seasonal award race, but no one knows for sure what that will end up being. Do you think we'll still see some service time manipulation this season by Major League Baseball clubs?
Yes.
Yes.
Always. Like... the Pirates, for instance, sent down O'Neill Cruz to AAA, former Dodger, by the way, former Dodger prospect, who's like, I don't remember his exact height, but I think he's like 8'4", and he lanky dude who hits a lot of home runs. But yeah, they're sending him down. Like, it's certainly going to happen. So I believe Rookie of the Year is one way to sort of get rewarded, but I think if you hit other stuff, the teams, I think, get rewarded with it, like the draft picks for that. So it's not necessarily just that first season thing, but yeah, they're still going to for sure manipulate service time. So yeah, they didn't do like a ton to like stop that stuff.
Yeah, I'll agree. And especially on, you know, because getting a year of control on even a not tops prospect is just very, very valuable. So,
yep.
We'll see plenty of it. Maybe less, hopefully less.
Yep.
You can decide if this is contest worthy, and I have decided that it is. But in any case, please name the Dodger with the season's first outfield assist, first steal of third base, and first triple.
Okay. Do you want to go first on the outfield assist, or do you want me to go first?
We'll snake this, even though it's three. You do the first outfield assist, and then I'll take the next two.
So again, this is just to be different. But I'm going to go Kevin Pillar. I'm going to jump in on the he'll be there by Tuesday bandwagon, and so just so I can be wrong on Kevin Pillar like 87 times at some point this season.
So I'll take outfield assist and. Oh, Mookie Betts. I'll go chalk.
I was gonna say Mookie Betts, and then I was thinking before that it would have been funny after we talked about like Chris Taylor's elbow, and then like it's gonna be him. So yeah, Oh, so you have first
steal of third base. I'll go Trey Turner. I'm going to go chalk this whole time, I think.
Of third, okay. You're going Trey. I will say... Oh, man. This is so bad because I want to say Cody Bellinger, but then I'm like, is he going to be on second base? I will say, I'm going to go Gavin Lux. Why not?
Okay. First triple, I will go. I'm Trey Turner. Mm-hmm. Very boring here.
First triple. Okay. So I'm going to say I'll go Chris Taylor then.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Food question. Given the choice, do you prefer a quesadilla with or without meat or a classic deli melt, whether it's roast beef, turkey, or tuna?
Wait. The choice is like a quesadilla or
regardless
a melt?
Of whether it has meat or not, or a melt.
Quesadilla. Pretty clear for me, I think.
Not for me. Melts. I love myself a good turkey melt. One of my favorite things. It's grilled cheese with meat, man. It's delicious.
I mean, sort of. Yeah, I guess. Quesadillas are great. I generally don't put meat in a quesadilla. My general thing is if I make a quesadilla at home, it's just like a quick thing. And I'll put maybe I'll slice up a jalapeno or something and put it in there, something like that. But it's pretty much just cheese. But I'm not averse to meat in there, but I just kind of like the cheese part. I used to do this. This is a weird thing because I've never been a big tuna melt guy. However, one of my old jobs, there was this sandwich spot that delivered that was reasonably close, and I would order the tuna melt with no cheese, only because I liked the hot sandwich factor of it, and the tuna they had was really good. But I couldn't do cheese on tuna. Maybe that's clouded my melt stance over all these years. So who knows?
I'm not having a melt today, but I might have a melt tomorrow because that sounds really good. And I'm definitely making hoagies for my birthday this weekend. So
that's nice. Is that your, that's your big birthday plan, is having hoagies? It's a good plan.
I mean, there'll be some Dodger baseball on. That'll be pretty good.
I think a cheesesteak is pretty great. So might have to make that happen. And I'm glad Craig brought that up because now I'm hungry again, as is usually the case. But yeah, so happy birthday, Jacob. Ooh. And happy opening day to everybody. And we will talk to you in theory next week, but also possibly very soon if some weird Dodger thing happens. So
I don't want to record twice this week. Let me enjoy some baseball.
Yeah, that's a good one. Let's just enjoy baseball this week, everybody. And thanks for listening. See ya.